No matter who you are, no matter what you do, everyone has a story to tell. And right here on this LGBT show is where it all starts. We lift our voices, share our stories, and we'll raise our pride. After all, we've come a long way since 1969 and the Stonewall riots, to the legalization of same-sex marriage, to the recognition of trans equality. I'm Mark Tara. Join me on this journey through Rainbow Country. This is CIUT 89.5 FM, and this is Rainbow Country, the station's gay radio show giving voice to the LGBT community. I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. A little bit about me. I am an LGBT content creator. I'm also a recording artist. Get social. Get interactive like you have been on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook at Mark Tara Music. Honey, follow me and I'll follow you back, because that's just how I roll. The email address is rainbowcountry@ciut.fm. Again, that's rainbowcountry@ciut.fm. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes as well as on podomatic.com. So if you subscribe to the show, you'll never miss an episode of Rainbow Country when that episode goes live. And currently, all episodes are now online. And again, everything is hooked up through my website, marktara.com, marktara.com. So this is episode 34, and it'll be a split show. It's Black History Month. Later on in the show, we'll hear a clip from an interview that I did with Calypso recording artist Roger Gibbs, and he'll share his thoughts on Caravana and safety when it comes to being a gay man. In the spotlight, I'm featuring two women DJs that are still doing their thing, DJ Dallas and DJ Julie Lee. By the way, DJ Dallas is having a special event called Live, Love, and Lust, darling. Live, Love, Lust. On February the 11th at Eaton House, 710 Danforth Avenue here in Toronto. It starts at 9 p.m. Tickets are $15 in advance. And you can check out DJ Dallas's website at djdallasrocks.com. djdallasrocks.com for more information. So, my friends, this journey through Rainbow Country begins right now.
Hi, this is Carol Pope on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Joining me in studio, DJ Dallas. Welcome on board, DJ Dallas.
Thank you. Thanks. Great to be here.
As well as DJ Julie Lee. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
DJ Dallas, let's start with yourself. How long have you been a DJ?
Since 1987, with a little hiatus in the middle, and then back at it again maybe 10 years ago.
And you're currently still DJing?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah.
And Julie Lee, how about yourself? How long have you been DJing?
Oh, I'm old school. I've been DJing since the late 70s.
Okay.
I went up to the 90s and dabbled a little bit. Went back to the CN Tower. It wasn't the same. So that was basically it.
And you used to DJ at Sparkles, which was at the top of the CN Tower.
Yeah. It was the highest nightclub in the world at that time.
And it was high.
Very high.
But people were people necessarily high?
They were high.
Oh, in those days, I think everybody was high.
Yeah.
It was a fabulous club to work in.
Okay.
Had the red phone, so if somebody wanted to come up from the bottom, we would get a ding-a-ling like Batman or something like that.
So talk to me about DJing at Sparkles. How did you get that gig?
I guess through... I belong to Juliana's DJ business based in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they had approached me, and they kind of threw me into the Lion's Den, and I did a couple hotels. And Sparkles heard about me and said that they were interested because they've never had a woman DJ up there.
Okay.
So they thought that I was the one to come up, and I held over a couple of contracts there.
And DJ Dallas, you used to DJ, among other places, at Chez Moi.
Mm-hmm. The first.
Talk to me about how you got that gig.
Again, like Julie, I was thrown into the den, but for other reasons. I didn't belong with a group or a club. I was just a girl on the dance floor. And I guess my love of music and my look, whatever it was, the club owner said, hey, we'd like you to start downstairs and fill in at the... what's the name of that place downstairs, Julie?
I can't remember that.
Well, so I went to Sparkle. No, not...
No, not
no,
Sparkles.
You're Sparkles. I'm sparkling right now. Anyway,
yes,
I went downstairs.
Girl.
It was like a holding tank for the lineup, and then we still had a huge lineup, but it kept a couple hundred people down there just playing some music in the background while the big party was upstairs.
Until they could get upstairs, yeah.
So you're saying that at Chez Moi there were two floors? There was I know that there was the ground floor, but there was a floor below that?
Yeah, with a pool table and the machines you put the quarters in and you play.
She'd be rotating downstairs and I'd be rotating upstairs.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Julie, did you DJ at Chez Moi as well?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I met her.
Yeah, that's who they pulled me when I came back from Sparkles because they wanted me to go to Bangkok, Thailand. I said no. Wasn't feeling like that. And then I decided I'm going to start my own company.
Who wanted you to go to Bangkok, Thailand?
Juliana's Sound Service.
Okay.
From New York. And I said no. And I decided,
And why would they want to do that? Why do you think?
Oh, because they sent DJs all around the world.
Okay.
And they thought I was ready to do that. But I wasn't ready for Bangkok, Thailand. Wasn't ready to leave my family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to not use Juliana's anymore, that I've already caused a name for myself.
Right.
And went right into the gay scene. Started at Together's, and then Chez Moi had heard about me and yanked me from there. And that's when I started there at Chez Moi.
And DJ Dallas, what other clubs did you DJ at?
Oh, by the way, it was the Stardust Lounge. Remember that?
Oh, that was
really
Stardust.
The Stardust. Yeah, not Sparkles, the Stardust. It was Starry. Then I went on and I played at Deco's. Then I was at the Rose Cafe. Mm. I did Reflections and a little... I played Tracks, which was a men's bar.
Mm-hmm.
Odd enough, but they built a little DJ booth up in the sky. And I was up there for a while. And there was a little bar they started for a while, Cockatoos, I think. I did a little thing at Zippers as well. Yeah, so, but then I think that all that was left was the Rose Cafe, and then everything else just started closing down, wasn't being supported or for other reasons. And then I was carrying these big amps around with me doing private functions, and that was just too hard. So then I said, okay, this is too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to college and started working on some business diplomas.
But now you're DJing, doing
Absolutely.
Special events.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Well, it was...
Do you have a company?
No, it's just me.
Okay.
It's just DJ Dallas and...
smart.
Yeah, it's just...
Very
too many,
smart to do it
too,
yourself.
Too many chiefs, you know. But it's just me and then my wife. She works with me. And so there was a need, a little cry out from the community. Saying we need events, but I had done a couple of reunions with some event coordinators and realized, oh my gosh, each time we did a reunion, we would pretty much break the floorboards, and the bars would run out of booze because the women were out there,
right. And
we just had to give them somewhere to go.
Right.
So then I realized, however, when I came back, so I was with vinyl. I was a vinyl girl, and mm-hmm. then when I came, it was CDs when I left, hated CDs. Then I came back, and it's these computerized programs,
right.
And I don't even know if I owned a computer when I was told, here, you have to use these now.
Right.
And took all my vinyl, made them into MP3s, put them on a system, and then said, okay, I'm gonna see if this will succeed, if making these events happen
mm-hmm.
is worthwhile. If the community wants this, then I'll keep doing it. And so that's what I've been doing.
She's done fabulous with it, too. I mean, sold out. I love the boat cruises.
They're fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely amazing.
The big events, yeah.
Absolutely amazing. You've done a wonderful job, Dallas.
Thanks, Julie.
And Julie, you also make special guest appearances as well.
Well, no. I stopped DJing a while ago. The
right.
only time I
no,
do
but
is...
No, but I meant with Dallas.
Me.
Oh, I was about to say, yeah. The only person is when I go to Dallas, and she says, Julie Lee, get up here. Hands me her tambourine and a mic, and I do my little
off
spiel.
She goes.
And then that's it.
She gets the crowd crazy.
Yeah.
She makes them go wild. Hey, Toronto, do your gig. Say
it's party
it, say
time
it
on the east side of the city. Time to get down with the sound and kill it with a skill and get live with the five and say, hello.
Hey, that's Julie.
So, Dallas, let's get back to your current DJing. You say you take it around. What sort of areas do you go to?
I do. A lot of the Pride organizations invite me to come and do their big Pride events.
Okay.
So the Tri-Pride community, Cambridge, Kitchener, Waterloo. I've been out to London. I do some stuff out there as well. The London Lesbian Film Festival, I had numbers of 1,000 there at a gig. And that was... What a fantastic venue. It was just, we grew. We went from 500 to 1,000 out there. And then I do Guelph Pride. I'm doing that. We're already booked for this year for their fundraisers. I do my own gigs here in Toronto, so not necessarily with Toronto Pride.
Right.
And then out to Durham as well, out that way doing some events.
So is there a specific place that you do these at, or they're just wherever...
I find venues
okay.
that can accommodate approximately 200 people,
okay.
and hopefully they'll have a bar license, so I don't have to deal with that.
Right.
I just bring the music and
the people.
And then hopefully the people will come, but I'm always looking for new venues, and I'm looking to go up to Barrie and up to that way. So, you know, if anyone's listening and they know a great venue, even some cool places in Toronto and Cambridge, I'm still looking, so...
Yeah.
I'd love to. I haven't been in Cambridge for a while. The main venue shut down out there, and I've got hundreds and hundreds of people who are waiting to come back
wow.
dancing. So
nice.
I need to get back out there.
So let's get back to back in the day.
Ooh.
And Julie Lee, talk to me about what those days were like for you when you were DJing, when you were at Sparkles, when you were at Chez Moi. Did you sort of feel like maybe a bit of a rock star? Did you have groupies?
Yes, she did. Yes, she did.
Did you have women at your beck and call?
You know what? I've never looked at myself like that. I looked like, look, I'm having fun. This is fun. But people kind of throw that at me and everything. I was a show DJ.
Yes, you were.
I had the tambourine. I would carry on the mic. I would get in with the crowd because I wanted to party. I loved to party.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? And also being a female DJ back then, because I was the one probably out there that everybody sees. There was a lot of the underground DJs, but they were never out there. So I was kind of one of the first female DJs out without it mm-hmm. in Ontario, whatever. And that's how I got my name. But I had to do something different because it was a man's world.
Yeah,
with the DJing. And so that's when I came up with the tambourine and the maracas, and I love to carry on the mic.
Right.
And just get people going.
Yeah.
I want to hear them yell. I want to hear them scream, you know. I want to see them sweat till they get wet kind of thing. And that they did. And not in a that kind of way.
In a good way.
In a good way, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Back then, it was difficult at times, you know.
Because you were mentioning that it's definitely a man's world in terms
it
of being a DJ, especially in the 70s and in the 80s.
But you know the really good thing, Mark, that I had is I got to know a lot of the guy DJs, mm-hmm. like John Weber and all of them, and they really took me under their wing. And I think that's what really helped me get my reputation out there and stuff is because of their support. I mean, they were my backbone. You know, they just helped me with everything and offered their help, and they were amazing, and we're friends to this day, thank goodness.
My partner, actually, my ex was actually Julie's partner DJ, and she was DJing with Julie at the time, and then she left, and then I started soon after. And unlike Julie's wonderful story where she had support, she told me, if you decide you want to be a DJ, she said, I won't leave you, but I'm not helping you. She said, you're on your own. Yeah. And then that was it, so...
Yeah.
So I would have loved to have been under a wing.
So DJ Dallas, when you were starting out, what was it like for you?
It was just fantastic. It was terrifying, terrifying. But, you know, face your fear. You know, I was from Newfoundland, and I wasn't even allowed to touch our family stereo. And then I come up here, and I'm given this big, massive system and all these buttons, and then not even to mention the lighting system that I had to operate too. But it was pretty overwhelming. But I don't remember any of the times being overwhelmed. I just remember floating, and it was just a phenomenal feeling. It was so fantastic when that place was rocking, the patio was full, everybody was bouncing to the exact same vibe, everybody feeling it, and then knowing that the basement was full, the patio was full, and there'd be lineups clear down to Church Street. Like, that was what a feeling that was at the Shea. And then it being a man's world, I never knew because Julie was out in the rest, in the big world, and I was just in the little pond, Chez Moi.
Right.
And but then somehow the Jolt Awards was a DJ or entertainment award, and it was for all the DJs in Ontario.
Okay.
And in 1988, I was nominated. So
whoa!
I was the only female in the history of the Jolt Awards
to be
nominated. I didn't win, but I attended, and it was all men.
And what was the name of
Jolt, J-O-L-D. I don't even know what it stood for. I never paid attention.
I
know.
Well, good for you.
I went,
girl.
Elvira Kurt was Elvira. Elvira was the comedian at that event.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but I never knew anything about who belonged where or whether I was in or out or up or down. I just knew I was here, people were there, and they wanted to hear music, and I loved to play it.
Right.
So nothing has ever made me feel as good as when hundreds of people are vibing the same. It's like there's stars in the sky.
Right.
It's like there's magic in the air. I really, it's beautiful watching it and being a part of it.
Well, on that magical note, let's take a break, and we will be right back.
Hey, this is Paul Bellini, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 on your FM dial.
So let's talk about the LGBT community. Let's talk about some events that happened in 2016. There was Orlando, the Orlando shooting, as well as here in Toronto, Pride, with Black Lives Matter Toronto. And Julie Lee, let's start with yourself. When it comes to Pride Toronto and Black Lives Matter, what happened in 2016? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's such a touchy subject because Black lives do matter. A lot of lives matter. But this is, I think they took this venue because they weren't being heard. And that was the top line. And it was like, somebody hears, and if we have to break down the Pride Parade to say, listen to us, they're screaming at us, we need help, we need support, we need understanding, we are people, right? I get that. I was a little disappointed that they did do that. But on the other hand, I do understand. I just wish they maybe did it in a little in another direction, where it didn't stop the parade, right. But they were heard.
What about the police aspect, trying to not have them partake in future pride parades? What are your thoughts on that?
That they don't want the police? Mm-hmm. Oh, I disagree with that. I think the police have been fabulous. They've been wonderful supporters. They're right in there. They have fun in the parade. Not all of our police are bad people.
Right.
I know police officers, and majority-wise are really good people. And we need them. We need them there.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And they're supporting us. And I believe that we should support them and stop bashing them.
DJ Dallas, what are your thoughts?
Well, with regard to the Orlando, I had just been there just a few months prior, and I have friends there, and I just think anywhere there's a hate crime against anybody, but this time it was closer to home because this is friends, sisters, brothers, and family. So it definitely exposed a vulnerability. And I have always feared, in being from Newfoundland and being targeted since I was a child, and having gay bars in alleyways and underground where there are no windows and basements where we would hide. I always feared that some crazy person would find us a really ginormous, easy target at our prides and at our events and at our nightclubs. So it was chilling. It was disturbing. It was personal and sad. And it mobilized and immobilized pieces of this community, because some people immediately said, "We're not going here." And I had an event coming up right after that. And then I was saying, "Oh no, I was doing a pride event in Toronto," and I'm thinking, people are going to stay away. And I had heard people saying, and they were writing on the walls here and there and saying, "Oh, you know, we're not going to go this year. You know, we're targets." And and we heard a threat that they're going to try and bomb the city and all that. And so, again, we have to be brave. This is not the first time that the gay community has been targeted. We were targeted by the police back in San Francisco,
back then,
you know.
But if you're talking about way back when gay pride was like two blocks.
Yeah.
And people would wait in front of the St. Charles and ready to throw eggs or whatever they can do.
Yeah. Right.
And the police never stopped them back then. But that was back then.
But we waded through that much hate, that much animosity, that much aggression. We waded through. We made it through. Mm-hmm. We took a stand. We said, "We're here. We're queer. We're not going anywhere." That was the big anthem back then.
We're strong.
And so then I just quashed everything really quickly. And I said, "Okay, so who are we? Are we going to stop celebrating? We never get together. Our community is fractured. And now people within it who we're counting on are now saying, we don't support, we're running and we're hiding." And it's like, don't do that. I absolutely was against that. Yeah. And with regard to the police, I understand, I echo what Julie said. I understand that that Black Lives Matter have issues. And me personally has had issues. And I've lived in the ghetto in downtown. And I've seen things that some police officers have done. But the community has worked closely. And I have friends who are officers and friends who are gay and straight officers. And
So
I have watched them try so hard and come to our community and bring us their support. And on a silly little, girly little note, those cops are pretty sexy when they come all uniformed up. It's a break from all the drag queens. It's like, whoo, someone in a uniform. So I don't care who it is. So,
and they're having
so
a ball
they go
there.
Through, and the crowd goes wild when the police come through. And I really like them there, especially this year. It was very important that they be there and that their numbers double, so that we had people to run to if we were scared or if things did go wrong. I really enjoyed the presence of the police in the gay community and all communities. They make me feel safe. So I didn't agree, but I support and understand why they would have taken that stand and why they held up the parade.
So where are you from originally, DJ Dallas?
St. John's, Newfoundland.
And what was it like for you growing up back then?
Horror. It was horrible being a young, a teenage lesbian. actually a childhood lesbian. I was six. It was just never anything but that for me.
Right.
But it was very scary. You were a pariah. You were chased. You were. I have scars actually from being stoned and
really?
And chased
wow.
by guys and girls and.
And these were other kids?
Other children, you know,
wow.
same age and older, mobbed, like the word used to be written on the poles around my neighborhood, Lizzie on the loose, and that was about me, you know.
Wow.
So I had to watch coming home from school and try different routes to make sure there were no gangs on the corners to chase
wow.
me. And so eventually, as soon as I could, I hopped on that bus, took the boat, and then the train and came to Toronto. I liked the anonymity. I didn't want to be seen if being visible meant I was going to be targeted. So, you know, I come from that. I came here to be invisible. And then all these fights and all the rights and all the prides and all the... And now I'm like,
yeah.
oh, I either have to stand up now or be invisible again. But Toronto was a much safer place, and I had support and I had community. So being visible then, it coaxed me out of the fear factor. I wasn't afraid, even though living when I moved here right in the ghetto, I had seen some pretty vicious hate crimes
sure.
against some of the gay people there.
And Julie Lee, what about you? What about your early days coming up?
Oh, my early days? Well, I mean, I knew I was gay. I didn't understand it back then mm-hmm. because I'm from the 50s. It was never spoken about. So I thought I was the only one in the whole wide world that liked girls.
Mm.
And I thought, I better start liking boys
mm-hmm.
because that's what is expected of
right.
me. Right? And I tried that, but, you know, it wasn't really my cup of tea. And I would have crushes on girls and stuff like that, but I never spoke about it because I was scared. I was scared that I was going to lose my family. I was
mm-hmm.
scared that I was going to lose my friends. And like Dallas, I don't know if I was going to just be kind of thrown out and left alone.
Right.
In that big wild world all by myself. So I was brought up in Hamilton and the West End. Yay, Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And
go Hammers.
It's never been the same since after I left. And then I came to Toronto and I started to, I don't know how I met some gay people. It just happened. And, you know, I would never admit that I was gay, though. I always said, I'm bisexual. Yeah, I'm not a gay woman. I'm a bisexual. Of course, I wasn't doing anything with men, but that felt safe to me to say that
right. mm-hmm.
just in case, you know, mm-hmm. I kind of got thrown out to the wolves again.
You got a hook back in.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I didn't dare say anything to my mother and father because,
right.
you know, they're old school.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way that we were brought up. I didn't understand what gay meant until later on when I moved to Toronto.
Right.
And that was about when I was about 17, 18. I decided to leave home and spread my wings and fly.
Et cetera.
And I'm still flying. And I'm loving it.
My mom let my my teenage girlfriend move in with me when I was 14. She was 16.
Oh,
she let her move in. Like I had a car accident, I was a mess, and my mom said, "Hey," she goes, "call Rosie, tell her to come up here." And then Rosie came. But prior to that, no girls were allowed in the house because they knew I was a lesbian, so I wasn't allowed sleepovers anymore. So then she said, "Call her, and she can come and she can stay with you until you're better." And I just. Never got better, and they got used to it, and she stayed living with me until I moved up here.
Wow. Did your mom know?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's fantastic.
We wrestled.
So,
we were wrestling a lot.
So where is she
mom
now?
Said, mom said, "You girls are always wrestling." I'm like, "Yeah, we just love wrestling, Mom."
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah, yeah. Well, she's in Hamilton.
Yay, Hamilton again. Something about Hamilton and the water.
Yeah. Yeah, but I was very fortunate, although the circumstances on the outside
right.
weren't, but I found me. I hung with an entire lesbian troupe that I met from the age of 12, 13, 14, 15. And every year I met one or two more, and we just all ascended and joined together.
You needed each other,
and we were strong. We were so strong together, and we were cool. Now they smoked a little pot. They smoked cigarettes. I never drank. But they were kind of real bad girls, and it was fun, and I felt safer with them than alone because I couldn't be bullied anymore. And and they're still my friends today, and they're still all gay today.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm very involved with them. Yeah. We found each other at 12, 13, 14. We grew up together, a lesbian circle. I don't even have, I have one straight friend from my childhood because I've been gay and found gays, and it's been a gay life, yeah.
Well, on that gay note, DJ Dallas and Julie Lee, let's take another break.
All right.
Okay. And we'll be right back.
BRB.
Okay. Hi, guys. This is Mika Barnes. Very happy to be with you on CIUT 89.5 FM.
So here at Rainbow Country, there's a little place I like to go called Erotic City. Julie, let's start with you.
Please
what are you talking about?
Please do. Let your hair down.
Talk to me about what attracts you to someone. What's the first thing when you see someone, when you're attracted to them, what attracts you to that person?
Their humor.
Sense of humor.
I love a sense of humor. I love somebody that's outgoing. I like somebody that's independent and knows who they are.
Right.
And I like boobs. I don't care what size. I just like
she
them.
Does.
And DJ Dallas, what attracts you to someone?
From a distance, I know. I love the sense of humor. Fantastic. Mm. But from a distance, I just get it. I just get that rush, and I go, "Oh, you're the one for me."
Yeah, it's just something about that person that just kind of catches your eye, not once, but when you look twice, it's like,
It's the stature. It's their presence.
Yes.
It's the presence of that person.
That's the word.
Yeah.
Presence.
So, yeah, absolutely. And then I feel, I just feel that chemistry, seriously. And then...
That's it?
Yeah, yeah.
So earlier we were talking about the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're talking about, you know, being attracted to, you know, certain types of people.
Exactly.
Talk to me, though, about the lack of women's spaces in Toronto, especially in the gay village. There used to be, at one time, a number of bars, restaurants, that sort of thing, and now there's hardly anything.
There's nothing.
Why do you think that is?
There's nothing. There's nothing here left for the women's bars. Well, I've always said the reason why is if you ever went to the women's bar, there were still men going.
Mm-hmm.
The Rose Cafe tried to stop the men from coming in. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of the, you know, the women yelled, "We want our own bar."
Mm-hmm.
And so Ray said, "Okay, we're not going to allow the guys in, but we all have male friends."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there was a huge controversy about that. The women were getting upset, saying, "Well, I brought my friend, and he's a gay guy. What's the problem?" Well, what do you want? Do you want a women's bar, or do you want it just to make a gay bar, but it's more dominant with the women?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe that the women supported their bars enough. Women are more conservative when it comes to clubbing and stuff like that. I find they're at home, and they're taking care of business. They're going to work. Their days off that they're going to go to the club is maybe Thursday night for some of them,
mm-hmm.
Friday night, definitely Saturday. And then we used to have the tea parties and stuff, and they would go for that. Other than that, the rest of the days, where the guys go out 24 hours a day, I don't know how they do it,
mm-hmm.
they fill up all their bars still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, women can go to these bars and you only see a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The only time that there's ever a lot of women is when Dallas puts on, you know, her dances, which are incredible. And it brings a lot of people together from way back when to new ones up until now. And it's great. And everybody's excited for it because we don't have a women's bar anymore.
But why isn't there the outcry? Why aren't lesbians?
I think it's a different type of people now.
Well, women, number one, women are nesters, right? So the older we get, the more we gravitate to mm-hmm. our home, our family, mm-hmm. our tight, intimate connections, right? And so these women, then you'll find all these little groups of girls who get together 6, 10, 14, and 20 at a time. So 10 groups of 20 on a Saturday night getting together in their basement or rec room or backyard or campsite, or then that's 200 people that would have been in a club mm. but are now, like I said, they're just doing things at home or right. more intimate things. Then you have, I think that the youth now today, when I look back at me, back again, like I was saying, you were shunned back in those days, so you found safe places to go.
You found a community.
Right. And so, and you went there, and you belonged there, and right. you were safe there. Now, the accommodation, the acceptance, mm-hmm. all of the marches, all of the pride, all of the fighting has made so that the pub 10 minutes from your house, you're going to show up and you're going to be welcome
right.
9 times out of 10, right? And if you're not, no one's going to say anything because of all the laws that prevent people from mm-hmm.
From discriminating.
Exactly.
But it's a whole different type of gay people now, too. It's
well,
the
they're
younger
fluid.
Crowd don't realize everything that had to go down way back then, right?
Right.
They didn't realize how much we fought to bring the community together. So I think they don't really care. They just go to the clubs, and they go and they hang out.
And they go to the clubs they want to go
they
to.
Do.
They
do.
Yeah, exactly.
And they
and
hold
everything
hands,
is mixed.
And
everything
they make
is
out,
mixed.
And even it's
not
funny.
Important to them, to. I don't think, by the looks of it, because if it was, I think some women clubs would start popping up.
Right.
Well, they're safe everywhere. Now yeah. everyone feels safe everywhere.
It's
we don't need the
mixed.
Protection of these communities.
Right.
And as well, everything is diversified and fragmented. So, you know, you've even you had all the businesses, you had all the housing, the rental, everything was affordable. The businesses were able to come to an area mm-hmm. where they would offer something for mm-hmm. the gay community. So the gay can build it and they will come. Well, it's dispersing. It's dismantling, and so the gay people have no real place to come, and it's not affordable for housing anymore.
But why isn't it necessarily happening to the same degree with men's bars?
Well, like Julie said,
the women don't go out like right. they do. It's a whole
the
different
type
of attitude.
The men always have,
attitude.
And they continue to.
Yeah. Yeah, they go out.
Men aren't nesters. Historically, they're not saying they don't,
yeah.
but they're cruisers, and it's like a lot of them will even say,
women
"Hey,
women aren't like that."
Women right. want one woman for 35 years normally. You know, you tell that to a 25-year-old man, he's going, you know, like I don't want no old. I don't want to be. I don't want to be old.
I don't
want to
be tied
old.
Down.
I don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And I don't know, maybe there's more of them.
Well, a lot of the older gals would like to have a club, you know, to go to. But it
would
have to
go?
Be something on a weekend
like,
only.
Would they
you know?
Go?
No, I don't think they would completely support it.
No.
I don't think it would
I think
last.
They would go out there once or twice a year
yeah.
when they got motivated. But
well, I think more than once
but
or twice
by then
a year
it would
now.
Be so it would be so liquefied and watered down that there'd be nowhere to go to because there's
well,
not
they'd
enough.
Be bored.
Yeah, there's not enough. They don't want to go to the same place. And women are nostalgic. They want to get excited about things, and
right.
and they want it to be about them kind of thing. So it
well, it's already been
yeah.
proven from way back when
yeah.
that it the only way for the women's clubs to survive was to have the guys there.
Mm.
Which I think is fabulous. I never understood why, anyways, us all being gay people were mm-hmm. threatened with each other. That
right.
was never logical to me. I never,
yeah.
you know, like, I'm not interested in your guy, and you're not interested in the woman that I'm with. we should be partying together. Mm-hmm. I don't know where the threat is and why, you know, there's sometimes hatred against men and women. And it's like, why? You know, we fought so long to be accepted. And here we're knocking each other down. It's like, what the hell is that
Julie,
about?
Julie, the door swings the other way, too. Yeah. You know, there's lots of men's bars that women were not permitted.
And to this day.
And maybe accommodated or accepted on a small, like, Comrades. I wasn't allowed to go there when I came here. They would turn me away at the door. No, thank you. No, you're not allowed in here. Right?
I would question them. I'd say, why? You come to our bar. Mm-hmm. Why not?
I would.
Well, it's different for the women's bar. Yeah. I said, but you get really upset when we turn you away. We did that at the Rose, they got upset.
Yes.
I'll say this, though. I think that having a women's only space, women only, and I think having a men's only space, I think that's great.
Yeah, it provides something. It provides a service for the people who need it.
If it's good for one, it should be good for
absolutely.
The other.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And this whole idea of the gay community being, on one hand, with each other, on the other hand, fighting against each other, it's crazy talk to me. I just don't understand that myself.
It's like a family. It's like every family.
Yeah, but I just don't get it.
I love my sister, but I fight with her.
True.
Yeah, but you don't hate them. I mean, I know some people that actually hate them. Yeah. Do not even want to be in the same room. And I'm like, what's your problem?
Yeah.
Why? Are
you?
Because to me, I don't even know if it's about being a gay. Are you feeling threatened by them?
Or what happened to you?
Yeah.
In your
youth?
There could possibly be
some issues along that line. But I never understood it. I thought, I love the boys. I love my boys in the band.
And so, we love you too.
you know, I think it's great. I love them.
So here's my little spin on that. Not necessarily because men are always welcome and have always been. I've always worked with men, with gay men. I've loved them in the bars. They create an energy that I don't get from the women. They respond to a type of music that the women don't respond to that I love because I love all types. I'm like, oh, thank God there's some gay men here. Now I can play this and this and this. So they definitely bring something.
Right.
However, now, having said that, when I do my events, if I'm at a venue and my capacity is 200 and I know that the women haven't been out in 6 months and the women haven't seen each other, I'm sorry, but I would prefer that, I will never make it women only, but I would prefer that, because these men go out all the time everywhere. Yeah. It's like,
so leave
it's like
us
guys,
that one,
you
yeah.
know, but I kind of am a little more staunch at, unless they're your brother, your sister, or a strong supporter, when I do venues, I don't market publicly, and I don't let the venues advertise for me because it's kind of DJ Dallas's space for the night. And if, again, there's only room for 200 people, I don't want the regulars in the neighborhood in the pub in this place coming and taking up 50 spaces while there's 50 lesbians out by the door or sitting at home because they couldn't come out because I've ran out of tickets. So I get it if we're talking...
But
in
a
my
different
arena,
story than
right?
Nightclub.
Yeah, exactly. It's my and it. You know, these nightclubs are 7 days, and I've been. Yeah. I worked at the Rose where yes, men weren't allowed, and I worked at the Shea where Sergio, when he took over management there, he brought a lot of that vital energy and that aspect of the community into the Shea Moi, and he introduced me just so much about the men's events and Casey House and the drag shows, and he really opened my mind to this whole other side of the community, whereas it had only been women hopping around on the floor. Now I could see everything, so I really, really enjoyed working there. Then when I went to the Rose after and the men weren't allowed in and they knew I was there,
it
broke
that.
My heart. Mm. It made me so sad because the Rose was open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we had room for them, and they just wouldn't let them in. So
that made me angry.
Yeah.
I had a few choice words with Ray about that.
And the guys would be furious with me if they ever saw me, like, the next day or whatever. It's like, those bitches. And Larry was on the door, and Larry wouldn't let any.
There's a guy on the door. No guys allowed in.
No personality. Like,
guys that are waiting and everything like that, but there's no guys allowed
in. I'm not going to say no personality. The personality of a stone, right? So a lot of personality if he was a stone. You couldn't get past him. He was a wall of man, you know?
Yeah. Mm. But that didn't last long, you know, because a lot of people did complain about that.
Mm. I didn't mind having it. I didn't like me working there and my friends, but I support if women want to have an all-women space, and I support if men want to have an all-men space. Mm.
So DJ Dallas, mention your website, your social media one more time. And when people want to come down, lesbians want to come down and party with you, where can they do
DJ
that?
DJDallasRocks.com.
Say it one more time.
DJDallasRocks.com. And then you can find me on Facebook, just DJ Dallas. Don't block your profile because DJ Dallas is private. So I do have to approve you because I'm old school. I protect the women, and I've got lawyers and teachers and people and doctors who don't want to be out, and so I protect their closeted association with my group, and then they can do what they want after that.
And Julie Lee?
And Julie Lee?
How can people find out more about you?
I'm everywhere.
Facebook?
I'm everywhere. Oh, I'm Facebook, of course, yeah.
Just type
but
in
I'm
Julie.
Out and about all the time. I'm
Julie,
enjoying
she's a
life.
Downtown girl.
Yep. Enjoying life, yep. Having fun. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, ladies, thank you so much for being on the show.
Mark, thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
It's been fun.
Yeah. It's been fun talking about, you know, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Shame
absolutely.
Wong.
Yeah.
The Rose.
See
Pope
you in
Joan.
10 years. We'll have more to say.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
This is City Councilor Kristen Wong Tam, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM, and this is the station's gay radio show, Rainbow Country. I'm your host, I'm your tour guide, Mark Tara. Hey. So, welcome back, and it's Black History Month, so I thought I would play a clip from one of my interviews with Calypso recording artist Roger Gibbs, sharing his thoughts on Caravana and safety when it comes to being a gay man. So let's check that out, shall we?
Hi, I'm Lorraine Segato, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
So talk to me about Caravana, that event, and being a gay individual. Do you feel comfortable? Do you feel safe?
Not entirely. Unfortunately, there's still a lot of issues in the Caribbean community regarding sexuality. In the Caribbean community, there's a lot of issues that people bring with them from the islands. Like I mentioned before, the Caribbean community is expected somehow to act as a community like the Portuguese community or the Korean community. That is not going to happen in the Caribbean community. For what I pointed out earlier, there's 26 nations, multiplicity of languages and political systems and so on. So it's a wishful myth. To think the Caribbean community can behave or act like any other ethnic community here. But that diversity and complexity also reveals itself in the talent and the arts and, the fact that you have this reggae music that you've created in the Caribbean that has taken over the world, and calypso and soca music that has gone worldwide. So a small region, incredibly complex, but dealing with a lot of issues like sexuality. Mm. And I think we've come a long way, certainly in the masquerade community, whether it's the steel band community, masquerade community, or the calypso community, you will find a full representation of gay and lesbians. Mm. But the sense of being able to be open and totally open, there's still a degree of reserve, And that's not only around the gay community or the lesbian community, but sexuality in general.
So let's bring this full circle, Roger Gibbs.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2012, you received a special award from the Toronto Caribbean Carnival Festival, like I said, formerly known as Carabana, for your contribution to Calypso in Canada. So talk to me about that. What comes to mind? How does that make you feel, getting that award from that organization? How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel incredibly proud and thankful for the opportunity to serve in different ways I've done in the community with different organizations. I've volunteered or worked on their board. I've always been involved in the arts, not only as an artist and a practicing artist, but also on a community level. I've always feel that, you know, we move together as a community, and if the guy next to me succeeds, I succeed. And so while in Barbados, I worked with the National Cultural Foundation there for many years, and I also, while in Toronto, I got involved with the Caribbean Carnival and served on the board of the Festival Management Committee for over the last sort of 8 years. It's been a very difficult time. As you know, the festival has gone through very difficult times. Back in 2006, there was a sort of a near-death experience with the withdrawal of funding and the issues dealing with the governance of the festival. These issues are still have not been resolved. It started in 1967. That the issues of governance and artistic direction will be addressed and put the festival on a sound footing for the next 50 years, or for the future anyway. But, you know, we cannot continue to have the festival stumbling along or just... There will always be a Carabana. There will always be a Caribbean Carnival. It is part of the community's way of expressing itself. It's a celebration of emancipation. It's a catharsis, something we have to do every year because that's part of our culture. But figuring out how to express that within the context of the city of Toronto and Canada is not an easy task. To try to hear all the voices of the different stakeholders and to come up with a solution that's going to make everyone happy. It's not going to be an easy task, but the governance of the festival has to be addressed, as does the artistic direction.
So, Roger Gibbs, how can people find out more about you and Shack Shack?
If they would like to find out more about me, visit my website at spiritofcalypso.com. And we're on Facebook. The Shack Shack is on Facebook. Just go and Shack Shack Band or Shack Shack Music and look for... There's a number of videos we have up on YouTube as well. But mostly, I think if you go to thespiritofcalypso.com, you will find the contact information and how we can get in touch. And I look forward to hearing from anyone.
Roger Gibbs, thank you so much for your time and being on the show.
Thank you, Mark. Pleasure.
Hi, this is Carol Pope on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. This is Rainbow Country, the station's gay radio show giving voice to the LGBT community, and I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. So we just heard from Calypso recording artist Roger Gibbs, and in the spotlight section we heard from DJ Dallas as well as DJ Julie Lee. Don't forget, get social, get interactive. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Mark Tara Music. The email address, rainbowcountry@ciut.fm. And the podcast is on iTunes, as well as on Podomatic.com. And again, everything is hooked up through my website, marktara.com. Next week, the general manager from Steamworks, John Broadhagen, will be my guest. And finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you. Taking us out, Carol Pope, Rough Trade, Shaking the Foundations.
This is City Councilor Kristen Wong Tam, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Rainbow Country has been brought to you in part by Inspired Media, Inc. If it's LGBTQ, it's in their publications. The Pink Pages Directory, Pink Play Mags, The Buzz Magazine, and popular talk show On the Couch. 27 years and expanding. InspiredMediaInc.ca.